Hello, everyone, and welcome to Non-League Keeper, the podcast dedicated to the goalkeepers of non-league football. And I'm delighted to say that we are joined by one of the rising stars of the non-league goalkeeping fraternity. That is the Cleethorpes Town and on loan Kingsland Town goalkeeper, Theo Richardson. Theo, thanks for coming on the podcast, and how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Let's talk about the current situation because, as I say in the intro, you're Cleethorpes Town, but you're currently on loan at Kingsland Town, sir, in the National League. So how did that come about?
So obviously I've not played since, I think it was the end of November, competitively in a game. So I was furloughed from Cleethorpes as everyone else has been, but I tried to sort of use this time to get a loan move if I possibly could. And I wasn't expecting to go to the National League level. I sort of tried to get a loan move to the National League North or South when they were still up and running. And so I carried on doing a bit of training with my little brother, because he's a goalkeeper as well. And then just out of the blue, got a phone call from Paul Bastock from Kings Lynn. And obviously they had a injury crisis and they needed someone quickly. And they knew me from when I played with them at Grantham. So it was quite a quick transition, to be honest.
Must have been ideal then going to the National League, considering what's transpired since, with North and South being null and voided, whereas the National League's continuing. You've had a real good run of fixtures for Kings Lynn Town.
Yeah, so it's been really good. It's been exactly what I'd have hoped for, to be honest. So with the it's like I've always said that I said it in, I think, my first interview, even after the first game I played, I always backed my ability, and it was just I needed a platform to sort of showcase that I was capable of playing at that level. So the fact that it is in the Conference Premier made it even better for myself.
You mentioned the Paul Bastock. What's he like to work with? Because he's such a legend in non-league football. I think he started his career back in the 80s, well before my time of being born. And I guess you're of a similar age, so it'd be well before your time as well.
Oh yeah, a long time before me. Obviously, I'm only a 98 born, so even when he speaks to me sometimes in training, and he goes, "Oh, back in my day," and sometimes, yeah, you won't have a clue what I'm on about now because you're way too young. But no, I've known Bazza for years. His son was with me at Forest as a kid, so I knew Bazza from when I was tiny, really. And so when obviously we reunited at Grantham and then reunited again, we've always sort of kept in touch throughout the years anyway. But he's a really good guy. Like, he's in goalkeeping terms, he's very similar to me as well, because he's a similar height. He understands the way that I play, and his knowledge of football in general is brilliant. So you couldn't really ask for anyone better to have as a goalkeeping coach. Yeah.
How are you finding life in the National League then? Because obviously, it's not been the best season for Kings Lynn Town, but there's going to be no relegation out of the National League. So they're going to have next season at least back in, staying in the National League, and hopefully be able to progress further up the table.
Yeah, since I've been there, we've done really well, to be honest. Because obviously, we had Hartlepool the first game, got a good point against them. We've had a tough run of fixtures as well, to be fair. Obviously, we've played Altrincham twice. We've played Eastleigh. And like the run of fixtures we've got now are tough as well. So we've got like Chesterfield, followed by Stockport, Halifax, all teams that are up and around the playoff places and the promotion places. So, but no, I think the way that Ian Coulthouse plays, it suits me down to a T, because he likes to play out from the back. He plays good football, and that's the way that we play every game. And he stresses that upon us. So since I've been there, we've had good performances. We've showed that we can compete against the so-called big boys as well. So I think we've done ourselves a bit of justice, showing next year we should be further up the table than we probably should be.
What's the current situation with yourself? Obviously, currently on loan at Kings Lynn. Cleethorpes aren't going to be playing now probably till August at the earliest in competitive football. So is it going to be a case of you staying the rest of the season for Kings Lynn, and then when the new season kicks in, you'll be back at Cleethorpes, or are you going to be at Kings Lynn full time now?
So obviously the loan period, I think it's meant to run out on the 15th. I just see what happens. I take every game as it comes, play as well as I can. And obviously my contract with Cleethorpes, it runs out at the end of this month. So whatever happens there at the end of the season, we'll see what happens over the summer. My aim at the minute is just to keep on playing as well as I possibly can. And then we'll just put myself in a shop window and see what happens over the summer.
I was going to say that, because if you don't go stay at Kingsland or you don't go back to Cleethorpes, being in the National League, you're on BT Sports every week with the highlights package, there's live games. It's really putting yourself in the shop window that maybe another National League team or a National League North South or even a Football League club could come in for you. Is that something that you're hoping for eventually down the line?
Oh, yeah. Like my aspirations was always, as soon as I left United, I went on trial to so many different clubs and my aim was to stay in the professional game. And obviously things didn't work out that way and I had to take a step back and go, right, I'm just going to have to do it the hard way, which a lot of young goalkeepers don't really understand that they have to do these days. So I just had to go down to a level where I can prove my worth, prove that I'm good enough to be at the level I'm playing at now and progressing that way. So definitely aspirations of getting back into the pro game and hopefully progressing from there.
Going right back to the start of your career, you touched on it briefly with working with Paul Bastock's lad. Started off at Nottingham Forest, then Aston Villa. So what was that like playing in their academy sides?
Yeah, so like really good. Like I started, obviously a young lad. I think I was 6 years old when I got scouted for Forest. So started at Forest at six, stayed there until I think I was 14. Got told I was too small. So I got told I was too small at 14. Luckily, I had a relationship with a coach that was at Forest who then went to Villa, and that it was quite quick that I went from Forest to Villa. And I think it came as quite a surprise that I did end up leaving Forest. A lot of the boys that I trained with and played with, they were very surprised that it had happened. Like they had, and the coaches were, I think it was more a decision from the top down. So it was one of those sorts of decisions. So obviously I then went to Villa and Villa was really good. The coaching that I had at Villa, probably that shaped me for who I am now. I think if I hadn't had the 2 years that I had at Villa with Ronnie Sinclair, I don't think I'd be anywhere near as good as what I am now. Because as a coach, he went there and saw like I had the basics of being a good goalkeeper, but I didn't have like the really intricate little things that can take you to the next level. And he really, really took my game to a different level. And you could tell that. So when I didn't get my scholarship because they'd signed someone from abroad and I was too small as well. When I went to different clubs, they could tell that I'd had that coaching and I stood out like a sore thumb when I did go to the other clubs.
You touched on about being too small and it being the reason why Forest and Villa released you. It's becoming a common theme in the podcast is goalkeepers being released because they're not tall enough. Do you think that is something that should affect someone's decision in signing a goalkeeper? Because obviously that's just one part of being a goalkeeper is your height. You've got all your other attributes, your distribution, your shot stopping, your communication skills.
Mate, I've got a big bee in my bonnet about this. I hate the fact that clubs use it. I think it's ridiculous for a start. And the fact that if you look at other countries now, like you've got some of the best goalkeepers that have ever played the game, like Shea Given, Victor Valdez, Iker Casillas, either Peter Shilton. They're like 6'1", less than that, 5'11", 6'. And you're turning around to kids at like my situation. I was 14, 16, 18, 19, getting told that I'm too small. And I just don't know how you can say, if you keep the ball out of the back of the net, and Alan Fettis always used to say it to me at United, he said, if you're effective in the way that you play, why shouldn't you play? Just because you're a little bit smaller. I used to train with boys that were 6'4", 6'5". I'd still take crosses above them in a training session. Like, I just think it's absolutely stupid, to be honest. If you've got the spring, you've got the good distribution, and you make up for not having that little bit of height that some others may have, I genuinely don't see a problem with it.
You think it's something that the mentality should change then, is that with the height or what have you?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, played against... So, me and Tony Thompson played against each other twice in the last couple of weeks. Me and him are exactly the same size. Both of us got really good distribution and we both make really good saves. Mm. So you've got two goalkeepers that are not 6 foot, but effective in the way that they play. Because if you've got a team like Altrincham and a team like Kings Lynn that both play out from the back, and you've got a goalkeeper that's 6 foot four that can't use his feet, you're not going to be able to do it, are you? So having a goalkeeper that's a little bit smaller but plays exactly the way you want to play, I just think it's a no-brainer, to be honest. Like, you don't see, like, I use the first game I played, people obviously saying, oh, yeah, it's a big jump from the league I was playing into the National League. The first game I played, I played 15 minutes and I already had an assist. Like, things like that. Like, using your distribution to your advantage. And I just think if you've got other aspects of your game that you can use to be effective, I don't see why a couple of inches above everyone else is going to affect your game.
Certainly, let's hope the mentality can change. When you were with Forest and Villa, what sort of other players were in the academy with you who've gone on to have successful careers, whether that be in the professional game in the Premier League or have dropped into non-league football like yourself and really made a name for them?
Quite, to be fair, the age group, the two age groups above me when I was at Forest, a lot of the lads have come through and actually got decent careers. So we used to have a little car school, because I'm from Lincoln, I am. So we used to have a little car school, and so the car school consisted of me, Ryan Yates and Adam Crooks. So obviously Ryan Yates, we call him Giggsy. He's done ridiculously well for himself. He's obviously dropped down to non-league, worked his way up through the leagues, and now plays week in, week out for Forest. Crooks here, he's done well for himself at Port Vale. And then like other boys, like we call him Twisty, but Oliver Burke. So obviously he's had two £15 million moves, done really well for himself. And we, as I grew up through the youth ranks, Carl Darlow was the goalkeeper in the youth team. Did my, like, Patrick Bamford, Jamal Lascelles, they were the ones that we sort of grew up around. So they did really well out of it. And then when I moved to Villa, there's been like Callum O'Hare that plays for Coventry now in the Championship. Who else? I'm trying to think. Andre Green plays Chef Wednesday as well in the Championship. We've had quite a lot of boys that I've ended up playing with, like Rashawn Hepburn-Murphy, Corey Blackett-Taylor. Our age groups have seemed to do quite well out of it. And then like my own friend group, so like my own age group. So Harvey Nibbs, who plays for... Harv's my absolute best mate, known him for years, like my brother. Grown up with him, and he plays for Cambridge now. Kelsey Mooney, grew up with him at Villa as well. He now plays for Scunthorpe. So, like, my best mates have ended up doing well out of it as well. So, yeah, the players that I've played with have ended up doing really well out of it from a young age.
Some big names. And I noticed when you joined Leeds United, you worked with Bailey Peacock-Farrell, who's now at Burnley, and the Halifax goalkeeper, Harrison Mayle. So, you've had some really good goalkeepers and players you've worked with throughout your youth career.
Yeah, like, so... Obviously, we had a really strong goalkeeping department when I went to Leeds. Like, so when I went there, we had, so it was me and Will Huffer in the youth team together, and we competed against each other really well. Obviously, he ended up making his debut for Leeds in the first team, going on loan to Barnet, and he's now at Bradford. So he's done well for himself. And then obviously Bales did when I think I was either a first year or second year when he made his debut for Leeds. And then it was the year that I left, he got his running the first team, and he did really well, got his move to Burnley. And then Harrison's another prime example of he was like a little bit of a mini me. So obviously he played for England, he did really well in the youth teams, but obviously like he'll have had the same problems as me. He's not the biggest of goalkeepers, got good distribution and everything, but no, again, he's a really good goalkeeper, and he's done well for himself as well.
What was it like being at Leeds United at the time? Because the years between 2016 and 17, they were really starting to build for that push, which has ultimately got them into the Premier League and seemed to be doing quite well under Mario Bielsa.
Yeah, so like it was a bit of a strange period. Like, so obviously they kept on changing managers when I was there. So it was, you, I think it was Rosler. Obviously Neil Redfern was there when I first signed there, and then Red has left, and then a big change obviously happened with the academy and everything. And then Uwe Rosler came in, and then it was like Steve Evans, and then we had Gary Monk. Obviously, Gary Monk did really well at the start, and then it sort of fizzled out towards the end. But yeah, it was quite a, it was like a little bit of a transition period. Like it was like the transition before they got to the next stage, to then boost it and then go mad and then really try and go for that next level of getting into the Premier League.
Must be great though to see Leeds do really well back in the Premier League.
Oh yeah, it's a huge club, like massive club. You could tell even like the training ground, the stadium and everything. The fans are absolutely crazy as well for the club. So having a club like that in the Championship, it was only right for them to get back in the big time and get them back in the Premiership. Nah, it's good to see them. Like some of the boys that I played with as well when I was there, like Calvin Phillips, Jamie Shackleton, all those young lads that are now getting a run in the first team. So brilliant to see as well.
Phillips has also just got into the England team, so that must be very pleasing to see how well he's done. And he had a great three games first Gareth Southgate recently.
Yeah, Cal was one of the first players that I ever trained with when I was at Leeds. So like the first day I went in, he was always really like one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet in football. And he's got an absolute hammer foot. he's got one of the hardest shots I've ever faced off of anybody. He loves a smash for a shot. But yeah, really nice guy. And yeah, it's good to see him doing well.
Can he be the key to England's next tournament victory? It's been quite a while since England have won anything at national football level.
It could well be. He's proved that he can play at the level, and he's done really well since he's moved into the team. I think it's like when Leeds don't have him play, you see the difference when he doesn't play. So having him in the squad and making the team tick from the back and getting them forward, I think he's done really well since he's gone in there.
You mentioned just before about the academy change. Can you remember what the change was and how it affected you, or did it not affect you as much?
No, it didn't really affect me too much. Like it was obviously Neil Redfern was the academy manager as well as the manager sort of when I first went there, and it was Lucy Ward that sort of looked after us. And then obviously when Redders and Lucy left, it was more of a transition to Adam and Katie. So Adam and Katie were still brilliant with me. They did everything that Redders and Lucy did. It was just a slight little transition. It wasn't anything major. They'd obviously worked alongside Redders and Lucy anyway, so it was quite an easy transition for them to do. But yeah, they always really looked after me and they were really good.
You moved to Manchester United in 2017. I believe you were signed by Jose Mourinho. So what was it like being signed by the special one, as he dubbed himself once?
No, it was obviously it was a big moment for myself. Like when it all happened, it was a bit of a blur because obviously I'd been told by Leeds, it was like, I think it was around March, February time, and I'd just been told that I wasn't getting a professional contract. So it was, everyone was like, well, what are you going to do now? And I was on trial at Notts County. Because I knew, so the person that I knew from Forest and Villa days, he'd gone to be the academy manager at Notts County. I'd gone there for 2 days, and on the second day, I'd had a text message from Neil Sullivan, who's my goalkeeper coach at Leeds, saying that United had been in contact with them. So it happened really fast. So I spoke to, I think, Dave Harrison at United, and he basically said, yeah, I came to, because I played Youth Cup both years that I was at Leeds, and I played really, really well in all the games that I played. And he said, well, if we ever got the chance of Theo Richardson becoming available, we'll get him in. And Ilias, the lad that was at United, he got injured and done his knee. So they said, yeah, we need you to come in for a few days and just see what happens. And they said, if you do well, there's a possibility if you're going to Dallas at the end of the month and playing in the Dallas Cup. So literally, I think I was there. It was the first day. Fettes said to me, that Alan Fettes said, yeah, we want to sign you to the end of the season. If you do well, there's a contract for you at the end of it. And obviously, I went to Dallas pretty quickly, so it happened very, very fast.
What's the Dallas Cup like to play? Because I believe Wayne Rooney went out there for Everton in his younger days, if I remember reading right, one of his autobiographies.
Yeah, it was good, like really, really good. It was tough. Like the thing that I think affected us most is like we flew out there, and obviously it's like a 10-hour flight, and a lot of us were jet lagged, so the time difference really killed us. Because we got there the night before. And everyone was getting up at like 3 in the night thinking it's normal time. And we had a game the day after we got there. So we played Chivas the day after and we got spanked 4-0 because everyone was jet lagged. Everyone was knackered from the day before. But like playing in front of 20,000 people in the Cotton Bowl, Like you wouldn't even think there was 20,000 there because the stadium's that big. It holds nearly 100,000 people. But yeah, the atmosphere was brilliant. Like it was really good little tournament to play in, especially like playing against. I'm not really a big fan of playing against the Mexicans and the South Americans. Rather dirty to play against. But yeah, like it was a good experience going out there and playing. To be fair, we should have probably done better than what we did because I think we went out in the group stages quite early. But yeah, it was really good to go out there and play that.
Did you play in the Milk Cup as well? The famous Milk Cup, because it was a competition that the likes of David Beckham, Gary Neville had starred in their younger days and won it for Manchester United.
So it wasn't the original Milk Cup, I think. It was like we went over there. So I think it was the Northern Ireland under-19s we played against. So like it was a pre-season game. I hadn't played many pre-season games, and the 18s were going over there. So Kieran McKenna, who was the manager at the time, said, yeah, Theo, you come over with us and play for us in the game. So, I remember going over there. It was like my first game of the season. I think we won 1-0 in the end. But yeah, that was a good experience. There was loads of fans there for that. Fans were going mad. But yeah, it was like, I think it was like the warm-up for the actual Milk Cup starting. So it was, but that was a good experience as well.
Just overall, what was your experiences like in the Manchester United Academy? Because as we've mentioned before, we've touched on some names who've previously played in that academy and gone on to great things.
Oh yeah, like even some of the boys that I played with, it's crazy to think now, like obviously the boys that played in that game in the Milk Cup, like Mason Greenwood, Brandon Williams, Jimmy Garner, Nishan Burkhart, Callum Whelan, endless names that you could mention that I played with. And then like even when I was playing for the reserves, playing with like Scott McTominay, training with likes of like Zlatan Ibrahimovic, you'd never even think of as a kid training with these sorts of people, would you? It's like when someone says who did you play with? I played with Zlatan, Pogba, Wayne Rooney. So it was, yeah, it was crazy. But like the craziest one was when I did the I did Carrick's testimonial. So when I did that, wow, I'd just signed my professional contract. I'd been on holiday with my ex-girlfriend and come back and sat in the changing room. So I sat next to John Terry in the changing room. There's like the Clarence Seedorf, Shea Given, Mendieta. Like the changing room was like Jamie Carragher, Michael Owen. The changing room was absolutely crazy. And that was that experience of that day was probably the highlight of the whole 2 years I was there. Like walking out in front of 78,000, you don't realise how like it just gave me goosebumps straight away. You walk out and like I remember doing the warm-up with Van der Sar and Shea Given, and the first two strikes I had at them both, I shanked straight over the bar because I was so nervous. I was like, oh my God. And I remember sitting on the bench, like Harry Redknapp was my manager for the day. So he was like, oh, nah, Theo, we'll get you on. I was like, mate, do not bring me on today, please. I can't come on. Like, I was sat next to Phil Neville on the bench, and I was waiting for the end of the game to finish. Because I just, like, you've got all these big names, like, throughout the game. And I was thinking, yes, you can't bring on Theo Richardson for this. Like, not a chance. So everyone would be like, who's this kid coming on? Like, so I was just like, nah. But, yeah. The experience at United as a whole, it's just a different world. Like the big clubs like that, it is absolutely nuts. So something you take with you for the rest of your life. Absolutely ridiculous memories you get there.
When you left, how did it come to an end before you joined Grantham Town in the Northern Premier League?
So like obviously towards the end of my time at United, I ended up going like on trial to QPR. Went to QPR, then I think I went to Birmingham, went to Barnsley, went to Bradford. And I was like, so like, I'd been told at Birmingham, if I do well, sign a contract. Said that I was like too good for the reserves, but not good enough for the first team. Went to Barnsley, got a phone call from the Bradford manager saying to go play for them. Bradford manager said that he wanted to sign me. Went to Bradford, found out on BBC Sport wasn't getting signed. So then it was like a little bit of a period where I was like, right, I'm not training. I'm waiting by my phone every day. And that was when it came to, I was training at Lincoln. So obviously Lincoln's local to me. I was training with the Cowleys, and I just needed to get some game time. So Terry Bourne, that I knew from when I was at Forest, he's now the kit man at Lincoln, said, Grantham needed a keeper, so do you want to go and play? So I went and played a game, and that's when obviously I met Ian. So Ian Culverhouse was the manager, Basil was there, and he said, I played like 60 minutes, I think, kept a clean sheet, and he said, nah, you shouldn't be playing here. And obviously, like I knew myself that I shouldn't be playing at that level, but I had to do my time. So obviously, I played that game, went away for a bit, and I was still going on trial places. So I ended up going to Doncaster on trial. But just before I went to Doncaster, they signed Doncaster's youth, I think it's Louis Jones. He's been playing for the first team now. And so Louis was on loan at Grantham, and he ended up breaking his hand, I think. And I was still just training with Lincoln every day. I wasn't really doing anything game-wise. So Ian messaged me saying, can you do me a favour and come and play for me? I'll sign you on a non-contract. So went and played, started playing it, and got player of the month both months I was there. So I did really well in the foot. Like, we had a really good run of games. So started really well at Grantham, to be honest. And then the new manager came in, and we just didn't get along. It was just one of those relationships. I think he wanted someone a lot bigger than what I was. Obviously, Ian had left, and me and Ian got on really well, and the new manager just didn't like me. So it was just one of those relationships where he just didn't want me there. So I ended up leaving it. I think it was like early November time. And so I started like going on trial places again. So I ended up going to Oxford. Oxford really liked me, and it just went really quiet. And then it was just, I just had a bit of a waiting game again.
Was it important for you to get out and play men's football compared to playing the academies? Because you touched on the likes of Birmingham, saying you were too good for the reserve team, but you weren't quite ready to make it into the first team squad.
Yeah, like it was difficult for me, I'm not going to lie. Like when I did go to Grantham, it was more so like the, trying to put it in a right, like the, obviously you've been at a club like Man United, and you drop out of that club, and yet then it's like your friends and things like that. Like, that really affected me, because obviously the way that I was going from the so-called biggest club in the world to then going and playing, what, 10 leagues below what United were. So it was like people saying, why have you gone there? Like, what are you doing? And I didn't realise like what the level of non-league football was until I actually went and played it. So to actually go and play it, it opened my eyes more than anything. So like I say to boys now, if you've got the chance to go out on loan and play in these leagues, go and do it, because the difference, you think these leagues are rubbish, they're not. There's players galore that have come out of academies or they just don't want to be playing full-time football. They want to be having a good laugh with their mates, and they're still decent players, some of them. So when I did go and play non-league, like I remember the first 10 or 12 games I was flying at Grantham, and then I had a little bit of a blip. So I had like two or three games where it was the first time I'd obviously had a blip playing men's football. And that's when the new manager had come in, and it was tough, because you think, right, I've made a mistake here. And this is when people are like, money's on the line. It's not academy football where it's, oh, it's all nicey-nicey. It's like boys are playing for bonuses, like getting promotions and all sorts. So it opens your eyes to, right, I've got to be bang on every week now because people have got money on the line. So, it does. It opens your eyes.
Touched on about players coming out of the Football League who do want to play full-time. You joined Cleef Ups, where you come across Scott Vernon. I can remember Scott Vernon getting Blackpool promoted about 10 years or more now. So what was he like to play with, and what was it like at Cleef Ups Town?
Oh, no, like, so when I joined, it was Bazza, it was Paul Bastock that sorted it for me. So I remember I was like, I was going through a tough time at home. Like I was just waiting by my phone every day. I wasn't playing. Mum and Dad was like, you need to go out and get playing again. So Baz, obviously, their goalkeeper, I think he broke his ankle playing the week before. And the setup at Cleef Ups, mate, for the level they're at, they're ready to go places. Really good club, really well run. And so when I went there, they were really good with me. And Vern, someone like that, knowing that he's gone down to that level, and he slams them in every week for him. Like, he's still scoring goals now. But our team that even now, it's full of ex-pros, boys that have played in the conference, boys that have been like pros at Hull, at Bradford. Like, you've got boys like Alex Flett should never be playing at the level that he's playing at. He could have gone to Boston last summer, I think, playing in the National League North. And he's unbelievable for that level. Some of the goals that he scores and the way that he holds the midfield down. And then there's even more names that I could say, but it was just a team full of ex-pros. So the level that we were playing at and like the results we'd get, just we were a really good side for that level. But there's loads of them that are like that. So you come across them quite a lot now.
I think it's quite a newish ground they've got up at Cleethorpes, and they seem to have got the land around it to be able to expand and progress up the football, up the non-league pyramid and potentially into the Football League. Is that the aim potentially for Cleethorpes, to be National League maybe one day, maybe League Two club if they could?
Oh yeah, like ever since I went there, the original what they wanted was to just climb through the leagues. Like they know that they're one of the clubs with a bigger sort of budget wise. So they pay the players quite well, and obviously they get the good players in. But yeah, their aspirations are to just keep on. Like every year, it was like, right, we're winning the league this year. So like this year, we had quite a tough start as well. So it was probably a good one to be null and voided this year. But the year before, like, we'd have hoped to go up through the playoffs. And I think they've had like troubles in other years where they've had like points deducted and stuff like that. But yeah, I think I'd say five years' time, it wouldn't surprise me if they're up and around the National League level, because they're a really well-run club. The chairman knows what he's doing. And the players that they've got around there as well are brilliant, so it wouldn't surprise me to see him up and around that sort of level.
Yeah, just going back to two seasons ago now, when the season first got null and void because of the coronavirus pandemic, I think you were third, you were really flying. You were just a few points behind Leeds Town and Stamford, who were two really established clubs in non-league football. So was that tough to take, that the season suddenly got halted after all that hard work you'd put in to the previous 8 months or so?
Yeah, it was. I thought it was really annoying the way that it ended like that, especially then when we went back so early as well. Like, I think it was just such a rushed decision for it to happen like that. And obviously it happened the whole way through the National League pyramid. It happened to the League Two, League One, everything. But yeah, it was painful, to be honest. Like, we'd obviously played so many games, and then for it to not even, like, there was no relegations, no nothing. But there was from the National Leagues. I think it was really strange. But yeah, it was a frustrating end to a season, to be honest. It was one where we'd hoped to then go up, obviously, through the playoffs. We'd have backed ourselves in the playoffs as well, I think, because on our day against the big teams, we normally came out on top against the big teams.
Certainly do. Up at Cleethorpes. Do you think if you were in charge, it would have been more of a case of points per game rather than null and void? Because as we say, clubs have worked so hard for those months leading up to the start of the coronavirus pandemic, and it was such a waste for some clubs. I know the likes of Stamford, I don't think they were particularly happy because they were quite high up league. I remember them handling it really well, but I'm sure they would have been disappointed because they'd been top for so long.
Oh yeah, like without a doubt. You've got, especially like the league above as well, like South Shields. South Shields, the amount of money that they've pumped into it, and they're hoping to get into the National Leagues for the last 3 years now. And they've always been up there in and around it. And not being able to go up for them, so like they're going full time next year. So you've got clubs like that needed to go up. And especially for Leek and Stamford, they were up there for so long. I think Leek should have definitely just been promoted anyway. And then it should have just been like either a points per game, or there were like a mini playoff situation where the playoff teams play against each other and you just decide who goes up from that. I just don't see why they did null and void it in the end. I think, especially when they did the National Leagues where they got relegated and when they didn't, I just think it's stupid.
And not just for the Northern Prem teams, they hadn't actually won the league, but there was other teams. I think Jersey Bulls had won the league, and 1874 Northwich had. Vauxhall Motors, they had already clinched the title, so to have lost, that must have been very frustrating as well.
Yeah, for clubs like that have already won the league, like even Leek were miles ahead, like absolutely same with South Shields, they were miles ahead, like no one's going to catch them. So what, I just don't see the point in like limiting them to having to stay in there for another league and then another season even. And then they've had to stay in there for another season as well. So they ended up having to like halt their plans basically for two more years. And you can tell, like, Leek's Ground, the way that they're set up as well, they're another team that shouldn't be in that league because of the size of the club.
And then obviously this season just got, well, the season is still currently going on, but for Cleve Phelps, as you touched on, I think we ended up having a month, 2 months max of the season. So that must have been frustrating that you've started and then it's just suddenly come to an end so suddenly.
Yeah, like I think it was 9 games I ended up playing this year. Like that's what I mean. My last competitive game was, it was the, I think we won 2-0 against Belper. I think it was like end of November time. And that was it. But we were quite lucky in a fact to be able to still have fans in the ground. So like I know that the boys that I'm playing with now, they've not had fans in the ground all season. Whereas like I played in front of 400 fans every week when we had the when the pandemic was still going on. So we were quite lucky to have that, because I remember the first game of the season against Ilkeston, absolutely rammed. And it was nice to have that feeling back of having the fans in and having a bit of a buzz around the ground. Even when there is only 400 fans, you can tell the difference between when there's no one in there. So, yeah, I just think it's been a shame the last couple of years to cut people's seasons short. And obviously a lot of money's gone into the clubs. And yeah, it's just a shame more than anything, I think.
How have you found it playing in front of no fans? Because I was watching, I think it was one of the Europa League games the other night, and I think it was the Granada game, and they were saying that the Granada, the amount of performed and really taken the tie to Manchester United over in Spain, had there been supporters getting behind the players and really cheering them on?
Yeah, no, I think it is. Like you see the effect of what's happened in the Premier League, Liverpool and Sheffield United, two clubs that are massively reliant on their fans. So I think you'll see a lot more of the smaller clubs being able to sort of compete with the bigger boys that normally have the bigger fan bases with having no fans in the stadium. To be fair, for me to adapt to having no fans, it's not been too dissimilar, because obviously when you're a scholar and when you're like 14, 16, me being quite young, I was quite used to playing with quite a quiet crowd anyway, because you're obviously told from a young age that your parents don't say anything because you don't want anything to be said, really. But to be fair, for me, it's not been too bad, but you miss it. Like it's so much better having fans in there. Like it's like I said it to my girlfriend when I came back from that first game against Hartlepool. Like I have a game like that where I get man of the match. Like it's one of those nights where you think, oh, you could have the fans singing your name. You could have the fans absolutely buzzing because you're drawing with the second in the league. It's one of those nights you'd never forget. Like obviously making your debut and being like that. Obviously having no fans in there, it's completely different. And you just got to create a buzz yourself. And it's probably I think a lot of players will find it more difficult to get up for games with no fans in there as well.
I guess you miss the banter in some ways with the fans behind the goal. What's that like?
Oh, I've had some brilliant ones. I get called, the beards knew this is from lockdown. So I used to have like a little goatee when I was younger. And I remember I played, it was one of the last games I played last season. It was Belper. The amount of I got called Mexican, like a little Mexican, and there's like a group of kids that were just giving me stick the whole way through the game, and then when I made a save like right at the end to basically keep us level, and then we went straight up to the end and scored. So I turned around and gave him a bit at the end of the game, and like so obviously they'd been giving me it, so I gave him it back. And then they ran round to the tunnel, these kids, and tried giving me it then. Got into my mum and dad's car, and they're there waiting for me. So I had to duck my head down and everything because they're waiting for me at the end of the game. But yeah, I love the fan banter, to be honest. It sort of spurs you on, I think, anyway. So it's nice to have it.
It's one of the really important things of non-league football. And as we say, I guess you must be missing that at the moment with no fans in, but I think the news is looking positive. We could potentially have in the National League the last couple of games could have fans back in, so that must be pleasing.
Oh, yeah. If we get the fans in for the last couple of games, that'd be nice. Especially, we've got Wrexham second to last game, and it might be Dagenham and Redbridge last game. So, yeah, finishing on a home game will be nice, and seeing getting some fans back in around that time, that'll be good for, I think, us, especially for it being the last game of the season, it'd be good.
And particularly for the Kingsland fans, because they've never been in the National League before. They're certainly not in the last few years. And they've waited all this time to get up there, and when they do finally get up there, they can't actually go in and experience the National League. So that must be frustrating for them as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like you've obviously, they've had a mad few years, Kingsland. So obviously he's gone from playing in the Evo Stick to then playing in the National League North. Obviously they had the fans there for the majority of last season, and then they get to the, obviously the biggest league before you get into the leagues, and they can't go and watch. So I think for them to have a little bit of a taste before next season will be nice for them.
What's the future for yourself then, Theo? Is it the aspiration of getting back to the Football League, or are you just going to take each season and each game as it comes?
Oh no, I've always said like my aspirations are still to get back to where obviously get as high as I possibly can in the Football League wise, and just proving to people that I'm obviously I've had a lot of people that have doubted me over the years, and I just get I get a buzz off of like proving people wrong. So yeah, like obviously over the summer it'll be quite a big decision for me to see what happens, and so at the minute it just means playing as well as I possibly can. And just seeing what develops over the summer and hoping for the best and playing at the level that I can play at the highest, and then just move on from there, I think.
We always end these podcasts with a few questions. So the first one is, what's the best player played with or against technically? I know you've mentioned some fantastic names throughout this podcast, but if you've got to pull one out of the bag and say that's the best player, who would it be and why?
Oh, that's a tough one, that, you know. Well, you're one against and one for.
It's up to you. You choose who you want to pull out, whether your name's one you've played with, one you're against.
I'd probably say best player for would be Mason, hands down. Mason, like I've never seen someone like his finishing with both feet is absolutely ridiculous. Like Mason Greenwood's, like he can take free kicks with his right foot and his left foot, does the same with penalties and all sorts, and he's got an absolute rocket on him as well. So I'd probably say him four, and then I think I'll play Phil Foden against. So another one that's not done bad either. Yeah, I remember playing it. That was my first ever game for United, and I think it was him and Nemecha that absolutely ran it for City. So yeah, I think yeah, it'd be Phil Foden that I played against. Like he's just a little magician in midfield. Even then, he was still diddy little player, but he's just got such a low center of gravity that he just ends up getting weaving in and out of players. And it's probably be him that I played against.
Yeah, and Phil Foden's come through the Manchester City Academy, and what they've done with the academy there, that must be pleasing to see how they've built it up, the little stadium that they've got that the players playing, and they have that as their own.
Oh yeah, it's like we played there with the Rezies, and it was to see that you have like your own little stadium and everything like that. And the fact that it's all connected to the actual stadium, I think it shows like the progression that they've got from obviously you're playing in the little stadium and then you've got the walk over to the big stadium. It's clever to be fair in the way that they've managed to do it as well. And I just think it's only a matter of time before that. Obviously, you see like Sancho and players like that that are all coming through now. It'll be a matter of time before there's even more coming through from the City Academy.
Which goalkeeper did you model yourself when you were growing up? Who did you aspire to be like?
Oh, so I'm a Spurs fan. So as a kid, obviously I used to go to all the Spurs games with my dad, and used to try and go to as many as I possibly could. And Paul Robinson was the goalkeeper at the time. So I used to try and call myself, like obviously my last name is Richardson, so I used to get called Robinson a lot. So I used to say, yeah, just call me Robbo instead, call me Robbo. But yeah, like so Paul Robinson was the so like my girlfriend made a memory book for me for Valentine's Day, and Paul Robinson's on the back of it. Things like that. But yeah, he was like my aspiration as a kid, and then as I grew older, it was like Iker Casillas, Victor Valdez. Like Casillas for me is probably the best goalkeeper that's ever lived. And then obviously I trained like when I started training at Villa, I was training with Shay Given. So like it was that was a weird thing as well. So obviously when I went to do the testimonial, I went to Shay. I went, you remember me when I was like 13, 14, training with you, obviously seeing like the biggest players that you've been watching as a kid to then be end up training with them is crazy. But yeah, I'd probably say like Paul Robinson as a kid, and then Iker Casillas as I grew older for my sub goalkeeper.
We make a little preview videos to preview the podcast. I think we'll have to use that. You're showing as the Paul Robinson book, and that's the best thing we've seen so far on these podcasts. Did Shay remember you when you went to do the testimonial with him?
No, I don't think he did. I was a baby at the time, so I think he's still in the first team at Villa, and so I think I must have been like, I think it was my first proper pre-season there, so I might have just been about to turn 15, so I was still an absolute baby. But yeah, training with people like that, it's nuts when you like when people obviously say to you, "Oh yeah, who have you trained with?" And you say, "Oh yeah, that's Shay Given." And obviously when I did the testimonial, and like you've got Shay Given and Van der Sar in it, it's just nuts. Like thinking that these players have played like and been the top of the game, got like 15, 20 years. Yeah, crazy.
Some great goalkeepers. And what made you want to be a goalkeeper when you were growing up? Why a goalkeeper? Why not say a striker or a winger?
Literally Paul Robinson, mate. no reason else. Like my mum and dad, like even when they get asked it now, they go, why did he want to be a goalkeeper? And they go, Paul Robinson. Paul Robinson is to blame for him being a goalkeeper. So like, because I've had a lot of like outfield coaches. Remember, so do you remember Tommy Mooney? He used to play for Watford.
Yes, I've heard of him. Yeah.
So obviously, I'm best mates with his son Kelsey, and he was one of the coaches at Villa. And he always used to say to me, "You're wasted in goal. Why are you playing goal?" And to be fair, I don't think I could be bothered to run for one like some of the boys do. And then I just said Paul Robinson, mate. I just want to be Paul Robinson. So it was quite funny because like when I was younger, I think I must have been like 11 or 12, and I had a coach called Rich Keeling, and he was a goalkeeper, played for Walsall, I think, and he said, "You actually play like Paul Robinson," and that was like one of the happiest days of my life. Oh my God, yes, I'm actually playing like it. So literally purely down Paul Robinson. That's why.
Did you have the shirt with Robinson one on the back? Because you always see kids these days, they get the heroes mess you have. You was it Robinson one for you?
No, it was never Robinson one. You know, I had all like the same kits as him. I wore all the same gloves, but it was always Theo one on the back. It was never Richardson. It was Theo at the start, because like I said it to like we found the shirts the other day, so it's obviously the first time now that I've had Richardson on my shirt since I've been playing. So I've now got like the shirts when I was a kid saying Theo one, and now I've got the ones that say Richardson one. So it's quite a good thing to compare against. But now I've got like, do you remember like the Panini sticker books?
Yes, yeah.
I remember like my mum and dad one year, they took a photo of me. I'm in like my light blue Spurs kit with my gloves like this. And I actually got a sticker made in one of the books. So I've got in a sticker book somewhere, I don't know where it is, there's a picture of me like pretending to be Paul Robinson with my Spurs cap on, my Spurs gloves, everything. And but I never actually got a shirt with his name on.
Obviously, you'll have to get in the future then.
Yeah, I know. I was one, like, I remember my, you remember like the things you could call up for on like Radio 1?
Yes,
You keep on entering the things. Paul Robinson was doing a training session. Like they're doing a giveaway, so he was the England goalkeeper at the time. And I remember my mum and dad, they must have entered it like 50 times to try and get me to do it. I was absolutely gutted when I didn't win it. Like if there's one person that I'd love to meet, it'd be Paul Robinson.
That's it. You can meet him soon. That would be fantastic. I think if I was you, I don't think I would know what to say. I'll just be in awestruck.
Yeah, I think I would.
Yeah. Moving on, what's been the best moment in your career so far?
Oh, it's like, because I said it to my mates, like, when I left United, obviously, I was in, like, quite a difficult position, to be fair. And because everyone would say, oh, wasn't signing for the biggest club in the world, like, your biggest achievement. I probably wouldn't actually say that is. Like, I always said, getting my feet back on the ground and getting back up and playing as well. So I've got another job now, so I work as a personal trainer as well. And like, I'd say I'm prouder of myself now for where I'm at in my career than where I was when I signed for United as a personal perspective, because I just think when I was at United and I'd signed for it, it was like, you just think like straight line, nothing else. It's just football. And like now as a personality, I just think I've got so much more about myself, and being able to pick myself up from that and like settle my own business and stuff like that. And just, I just think I'd probably say my proudest moment was when I made my debut for Kings Lynn the other night, well, against Hartlepool, whenever it was, because that was like the sort of moment where I realised I did the right thing by dropping down. When everyone used to say to me, why the hell are you dropping down and playing at those levels? Like, because I always said that one thing I always wanted, I could not stop playing until I've had my name on the back of my shirt. And so that moment where I see my shirt, name on the back of it and everything like that, that was like the realisation where I was like, I've actually done the right thing, and I'm proud of myself for doing the right thing and picking myself back up and not stop playing.
And just finally, would that be the best advice you'd give to another young budding goalkeeper, is just to keep, get back on playing if you've, say, had the rejection at, say, like a club like Manchester United or even down further down the pyramid?
Oh, yeah, no, 100%. Like, I've started doing, like, little talks. So, like, I had a talk not long ago, just before Christmas, with some of the United scholars on what to do with, like, jobs and stuff like that, and whether to start studying whilst you're a scholar and when you're a young pro. And that's one thing that I regretted. As soon as I finished, I was like, I should have done my coaching badges. It's like, I should have started. Like, obviously, I did my coaching badges as a scholar. And then my mum was like, nah, you need to do UEFA B. And I was just like, nah, I'll do it next year. I'll do it next year. I can't bother to do it now. And then when I left, I was like, right, I've got no backup plan. So having a backup plan makes you think of football in a different light. Like, so like now, because I have other things going on, I don't think of all the politics in football all the time. So because I have my own business to run at the same time, and I have my other job as well, and I do like little bits of coaching, it makes you think of other things all the time and having other things going on. And I think like young lads, they get so set on obviously being a professional footballer, it drives them crazy. Like if they didn't have football, it'd just drive them mad. So I think biggest thing for a young lad is to obviously get a backup plan. And if you do not like get a professional contract or anything like that, go play non-league, go and learn your trade, play loads of games. Don't worry about dropping down the levels, because that's where you earn your stripes. Like my mum always used to say to me, like, that this is you like serving your time in those leagues and just doing the dirty work for you then to drive yourself back up to the top. So I always say, look, that's the best thing I ever did.
You just touched on the going back into Manchester United to do the talks, and it's quite current because there was an article out the other day where clubs are trying to be committed to, you know, providing aftercare to players who have dropped out the professional game. Is that, and the particular clubs, is that something that's important, it is needed in professional football at, say, like Manchester United, Liverpool, City, Arsenal and what have you, that they do have that level of aftercare after they left the club?
To be fair, United were really, really good. Like they've got a like a department called player care. So like if you ever needed anything, you'd have it sorted out. Like if you needed an apartment, your car sorting, your car insurance, anything, like they'd be there to help you. And there's one of the guys that works there called Chris McCready. I still speak to him quite regularly now, to be fair. And he was the one that obviously got me back in touch, like asking if I wanted to do talks with the younger lads. Because obviously I've out of the boys that sort of left when I left, I'm one of the only ones that sort of gone down the route of what I've done. Whereas a lot of them have stayed in the game, carried on playing, but I've gone down a different sort of route. But I think the importance of having that sort of aftercare, it's so big. It's massive. And I've seen it firsthand. Like my friend group, all of us have been involved in football the whole of our lives. So like there's boys that have left at pro, like say after doing 2 year pro, after leaving at a scholarship or just before scholarship, and some of them don't have a clue what to do, and because all they've known is football all their life. Like there's boys that can get depressed so quick, because you just like when you leave a football club, you're basically waiting for the phone to ring. Like you're sat there waiting every day. All you can do is go to the gym if you're not training with someone. Go to the gym and you're just sat there waiting for your phone to ring to tell you to go somewhere. And then that's not even guaranteed, because you're just going to go somewhere and see if they like you or not, because it's all to do with the politics. So, yeah, the importance of the aftercare situation is massive. I had the... It's quite ironic you said that, actually, because I've got a... there's I think the Daily Telegraph bringing out an article. They interviewed me not long ago, and they asked me about the player care with United. So that'll probably be coming out in one of their papers pretty soon. And that's me talking about how important that is.
Certainly look out for it. Certainly when it comes out. Theo, we've had nearly a good hour there chatting. So thank you for your time on coming on the podcast, and hopefully we can see you progressing really well, whether it be with Cleef Uppstown next season or Kingsley, or if it's another football club that you end up joining.
Oh, brilliant. It's been a pleasure to have me on, mate. Been a pleasure.
Thank you. And if you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter at Non-League Keeper. That's NONLGE Keeper. And if you want to subscribe, make sure you hit that button to subscribe, because you'll be able to get the episodes dropping onto your phone or your device the moment they get published. But for now, thank you for listening.